to the third case for today, Russell versus Chicago Board of Education.
Good morning. I'm Michael Ratzelowski, representing the plaintiff, and this is another 60B case. I think the difficulty that I have is to convince you under a very high standard to review what the trial court did. And I think that the thing that makes this case different than almost all the other cases argued before you is that my client, when she finally got a hearing on the merits of whether or not the principal had articulated reasons to fire her, that hearing clearly vindicated her position. There was a hearing, and that hearing, unfortunately, it did not occur until 2 years after her case was dismissed on a summary judgment by the trial court. The hearing officer, I think, found fairly convincingly and went through the evidence and showed that the principal essentially manufactured much of the evidence that was claimed, much of the evidence that was used by the trial court against her. And the diligence argument, which I guess is the other difficult issue, is that really her time for diligence on being able to raise that particular fact that she had had a full hearing on the merits didn't start till more than 2 years after the trial court had issued its decision. And I think that if you look at the hearing officer's decision, that the reason for those delays had nothing to do with her. I mean, it was the Chicago Teachers Union and the board both had changes in personnel, did not get the briefing to the hearing officer for over a year and a half later. And when you have what is on its face a clear manifest injustice in this woman having been basically railroaded by the principal, I don't think it's appropriate for her not to have a day in court. I mean, it's a very difficult situation. I think it's compelling, and I don't think it's the type of thing that would overburden the court, because there are very few cases that come around where after summary judgment is entered in federal court, the many of the facts that are utilized in that summary judgment turn out to be untrue as set forth in a hearing. The other issue is that the trial judge somehow felt that her raising the issue of of the principal and sending a letter to the school superintendent was not protected because the Seventh Circuit doesn't recognize that type of discrimination. Clearly, the Seventh Circuit does recognize that you don't have to be absolutely right on the discrimination. You just have to have a good faith belief. And certainly, she had a good faith belief, and she certainly, in sending letters to the chief officers and supervisors of the school, exercised her rights in an appropriate and responsible way. For both of those reasons, and because of the extraordinary circumstance where you did have a full hearing where both sides were represented by counsel, we would ask that this court consider reversing the trial court and allowing her to have her day in court on the merits of the claim. Take questions if anyone has any.
Louder.
Judges, counsel, Leanne Louder on behalf of the Chicago Board of Education. Counsel claims that the hearing didn't occur until 2 years after summary judgment was awarded, the hearing before the Illinois State Board of Education. That's not accurate. The summary judgment was awarded on December 19th of 2000. The hearing before the State Board was in July and August of 2001. So whatever facts were needed, if he claims that the principal misstated the facts and that there was newly discovered evidence, whatever misstatements there were, whatever newly discovered evidence there was, should have been at that hearing. And that was well within the one-year time frame that he could have brought a proper 60B1 through 3 motion. And those are the grounds he's alleging here. He's alleging excusable neglect. He's alleging newly discovered evidence, fraud, those kinds of things. And he had, if there were such a thing, that should have come out at the hearing, which was well within the 1 year that he could have brought a proper 60B motion. He says that the diligence requirement didn't start for 2 years. That's just not true. She had the same evidence. Apparently, she was the one who was being treated unfairly. She had the same evidence at summary judgment that she had before the hearing officer. So I don't know why her diligence has changed between in federal court to an Illinois State Board of Education hearing. If you were to allow him to say that he could bring his 60B1 through 3 motion as a 60B6 motion, you'd be foiling the one-year limitation in the rule. I ask you to apply the rule as it and to find that he has no reasonable excuse for having failed to bring the motion for waiting 2 years and 3 months and even 8 months after the Illinois State Board of Education hearing officer issued his decision to bring his motion. It was untimely, and we ask that you affirm its denial.
Thank you, Ms. Lauer.
As my opposing counsel noted, the decision was not issued until July 2nd of 2002, and my client did not have counsel. She, you know, and she was not able to articulate what was going on because she didn't have the ability to do that. It's very difficult for even most attorneys to figure out how to comply with a summary judgment motion. To expect that a pro se litigant should have to do that, I think, we have harsh rules because everybody is held to a certain legal standard. But when you look at the hearing officer's decision and you look at the absolute injustice that was done to this woman, I think that for the board to kind of ignore that you had the hearing that showed that everything that was done against her was fabricated, that, you know, it just kind of, you just denies the woman justice when you had a full hearing that showed what had actually happened. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement and moved to